Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Yes, indeed, especially lawns that don't get any moisture. And it looks like this week is going to be another dry week. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question for Julie Weisenhorn or John Trappi from the U of M, this is your day today here on our Smart Garden Show. Julie and John, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Denny.
Good morning.
Hi. I was thinking, hearing a commercial post-State Fair, and I thought, man, that's come and gone already.
Isn't that something?
Man,
yeah,
Zoom. That's crazy.
Time flies.
But, yeah, it's always fun to have you guys out there with us. In the meantime, if you have that lawn and garden question that we mentioned, especially since John is joining Julie today, any kind of a turf question, if you've got issues with your lawn, call us or text us 651-461-9226. My lawn, John, is looking kind of crunchy right now. And I'm thinking, I think I have a aeration scheduled, but is it better to get a lawn aerated? I just thought about this yesterday, when it's a little damp or dry like this.
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. It'll be a little bit more effective for penetrating the soil if there's some moisture in it. So if it's really dry, the aerator will still work, but it won't get quite as deep, and so it'll be a little bit less effective. So if you can do it a few days after a rain, or if you have an irrigation system, water a few days prior, just to help the aerator get into the soil.
And Julie, is there something I took out the remnants of my tomato plants, who kind of did okay, just kind of cleaned up the area right now. Is there anything else that we should be doing in our gardens this time of year? It's a beautiful weekend for that.
Yeah, it's a great weekend for that. So definitely you can be harvesting if you have vegetables. If you're growing flowers, you could be certainly cutting bouquets of those. There's not anything really specific that comes to mind. It's too early to do any kind of fruit pruning. That happens in the winter. You might be looking at going and picking up some mums that are available now. Both hardy mums, which will grow year after year in your garden, but also there are also florist mums if you're just doing, say, containers and you want something that is maybe not hardy but looks nice for a short period of time in your containers. I'm thinking about my houseplants that are outside and starting to think about where they're going to go in my house when it gets a little cooler. We've had some cool nights. And now coming up, we've got some nice warm weather. So you're still they're perfectly fine to be outside. But you might start thinking about indoors, like I should probably dust this table and where should I put this? And just kind of strategizing where they're going to go when the weather changes.
We'll get some advice from John, too, about what we can do this time of year for our lawns. But I'm looking at some phone calls that are coming in. In fact, let's grab a couple. Patricia calling in from Little Canada, I believe, this morning. Hi, Patricia. What's your question for John and Julie? Hello, Patricia. I think we're looking for Patricia's phone call.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. What's your question, please? I'm wondering if Patricia's listening to the radio and not the phone. Could it be?
About Creepy Charlie, I've asked my local master gardener And they found that very mysterious. I brought some samples to them. They have berries, ivory-colored berries on them.
Okay, well, okay. Creeping Charlie doesn't have fruit. So it's not Creeping Charlie that you have.
Yeah.
What? Wonder what it is. I can kind of picture there are probably some weeds that I've seen in my yard with little purple berries or something.
Well, she said ivory berries, right, Patricia? Ivory, like white colored?
I don't think Patricia's on the phone now.
Okay. So one plant that is pretty prolific, but it's not at all like Creeping Charlie, is our nightshade, which has a kind of starts out with kind of green berries and they turn black. But it's a fairly tall plant. Doesn't resemble Creeping Charlie at all. So, Patricia, if you are able, I would take a photo of that plant, take some really good clear photos, and visit our extension site, extension.umn.edu, and visit Yard and Garden. We have Ask a Master Gardener. We have a tool there where you can click on Ask a Master Gardener and then upload those images and type in your question. And we have lots of master gardeners. Maybe that master gardener just wasn't able to diagnose or determine what that plant was, but there are lots of master gardeners who can help you.
Okay.
So it's Ask a Master Gardener on Yard and Garden on Extension.
Let's pick up on another phone call this morning. Sharon, I believe, is calling in from Eden Prairie. Hi, Sharon. What is your question?
Good morning. Well, I've got a blue spruce on a stick, and it's an ornamental
Okay, and a standard. It's called a standard.
Yeah, and it needs trimming. I've snipped at it once in a while, but it looks like a donut on a stick, really. And I was wondering, when is the best time to shape it? I mean, I can cut it, but I bet I would butcher it.
Okay. Well, and that's a great question. Oh, good. I'm glad it's healthy. That's terrific. So this is a blue spruce that's been grafted onto what's called a standard, and it creates kind of a tree form, a lollipop form, or sometimes they have branches that kind of reach upward. Sometimes they're weeping also. So lots of really interesting plants. They're accent plants that kind of reach upward. Sometimes they're weeping also. So lots of really interesting plants. They're accent plants in the landscape. So in other words, they're very distinctive year-round in their form, and particularly if they're evergreen like this blue spruce. You can shape those plants. I'd recommend holding off right now, just because when you prune a plant, it tends to produce more growth at the point at which you cut. It's a response that the plant has to the cutting of their branches. So I would hold off, and I would look at maybe doing that next spring or even in the winter. You could try doing that. It might be kind of interesting. That the plant being dormant is not going to respond in the same way. It's going to wait until spring, and then it will start to produce new growth at those points. And next year in the spring, in the growing season, consider just pruning off the newest growth. Don't go deeper than that. So that's that more tender growth at the ends of the branches, and kind of stay within that boundary. Otherwise, you're going to get a plant that starts to lose that nice shape that you like.
For a moment there, I thought we were still talking about the state fair food, like blue spruce on a stick, you know, vegetarian offer.
That's where my mind went.
I did
great
kind of wonder if she
alike.
Got it maybe at the DNR booth.
Very good. I'm getting a signal. We need to take a quick break. I want to alert our phone callers. Stay there. We've got text messages to impart as well. This is in the midst of our Smart Garden Show. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you might have at 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO, it's now 50 degrees in the Twin Cities. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday on CCO in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks to folks like Julie Weisenhorn and John Traffy from the U of M. They're with us this morning answering those lawn and garden questions. And we have many, both by phone and by text. Before we get back to the phones, I wanted to grab this text that came in earlier about two asparagus beds. Texter says, I want to mulch them over the winter. Is it better to use straw or shredded leaves?
Well, I think that I think you could use either. Straw is pretty common. It's probably cleaner for the plants than, and it's a maybe a little bit, it's probably more traditional, I would say. But I think you could use leaves. And I think either one would be fine.
All right. Very good. Back to the phones we go. Catherine checking in from Blaine this morning, I do believe. Catherine, you're on CCO. What is your question?
Good morning, guys. I'm so happy you took my call. I have I have a problem with my hostas. They have holes in them. What is that from? Do you have any insight on that?
Well, holes in the leaves can be from a number of things. One of the easiest ones, and you can think back to where the weather's been where you live, and that would be hail. That's the first thing. If you haven't had any hail, holes in hostas can be from leaf-chewing beetles that are just out, you know, and unless you actually catch the beetle in the act, it's hard to determine which beetle is chewing on them. They can also be from damage from mechanical damage. So if they are near where you mow or weed whip, you can also damage them that way. So that would be a human factor. So if you haven't had hail, I would say it's probably more likely insect damage. If they ever are very shredded, it could be deer damage, where deer are feeding on them too. The deer tend to pull on the hostas and kind of shred the leaves. So it's a number of different things it could be.
Okay. Looking at a bunch of lawn questions, John, let's see if we can't field a couple of these and get back to the phones. What type of grass seed to put down next to a curb or driveway?
The fine fescues are the most salt tolerant. So, you know, typically there's a lot of salt damage if we've had a lot of snow and ice over the winter. So if there's thin turf there, oftentimes it starts with salt damage from winter stress. So I would look at the fine fescues. They generally work well in most lawn situations, and they work really well, or the best, I should say, among the turf grass species next to driveways and sidewalks.
All right, very good. My neighbors grow thistles, Texter says. All pleased to have them removed have been rejected. Is there any way to limit their migration into my clover lawn?
Oh, boy, it's just going to be weeding. Weeding and treating, so those are basically, that's basically it. I don't know, John, anything?
Yeah, thistles are really tough to predict when and where they're going to emerge just because the seed is so viable for so long. So if you're really dead set on doing this, maybe consider planting something that's going to block the seeds from carrying by the wind, but that's probably not very effective in itself. A dense and healthy turf is the best defense against weeds. So, just having a healthier lawn like you're trying is going to be your best option for preventing them.
Very good. Back to the phones we go. Monica calling in this morning from Bloomington. Monica, good morning. What is your question?
Good morning. We've had a crop circle of clover that we usually do every year in our yard, and this year it's about maybe 8 to 10 feet. In early spring, John, I don't know if this is pertaining to you because of turf, but in early spring we saw rabbits around the area in the crop circle of clover. One rabbit was like really down far into the clover. But the next day or two went over there, and my hand, there were two skid marks, and I followed it looked like it went below the soil into the ground. I didn't pursue it any longer. So during the summer, we have found baby bunnies, you know, around the yard, not necessarily in that clover patch, but I've seen mother rabbit around there. The grass, of course, around that area is really, really long now after all this time. We usually start mowing it. My husband is antsy to mow it. Number one, I haven't seen the rabbits around. I don't know if they still have a nest. So I guess my husband and I are wondering when we can start safely mowing it or how we mow it. And that's my question. So, John, I don't know if you've had customers had rabbits under their turf and what to do. Or Julie, a sure. bunnyologist, anybody would help.
A bunnyologist.
That's a new one. I would just maybe use a rake and turn it upside down and try to go through and just kind of lightly move the vegetation around. And they're at this point in the year, unless it's a second generation of baby bunnies, they should be mobile enough to avoid the mower. But if you just go through and just kind of lightly, look and move the vegetation away, you should probably be able to find them and encourage them to move out of the area so that way you can mow. And I definitely would consider mowing. It's going to be better for the clover. It's going to be better for the lawn. I think in the long run, I would definitely try to get on that if you can.
Okay. Let's grab one more phone call before we look at that forecast. I think Mike is calling in this morning from Roseville. Hi, Mike. Thanks for waiting. What is your question?
Good morning. I've lived in the same house here for 32 years, and this year something really different is happening. I fear for going out on my rear out of the house on the back end and go out on the deck. For fear that my feet are going to stick to the deck. I got a giant pine tree here that I've never seen this before, but everywhere I look, there's sap, and it's sticky. And the deck, on the furniture, on everything. Is there any reason for this year to be particularly bad for these big, long, big pine trees dropping their sap all over?
So I don't believe it's sap. It's probably honeydew. And honeydew is produced by aphids and other sucking insects like scale. It looks just like sap, and you're describing exactly what it is. When it hits a big, when these insects get into a big tree, like a shade tree or an evergreen, it's really difficult to manage them. And you do end up with this honeydew all over the place. I've had people report that even their dog has it on them. Cleaning it off, you can scrub it with a hot soapy water. If you have a alcohol-safe surface, like a grill or something, you can use isopropyl alcohol to try to get it off. But if you don't remove it, it's going to start to turn black. This is called sooty mold. It will attract fungal spores, and so it might start to stain some of your if you have like furniture and whatnot. A deck cleaner will probably help too, a commercial deck cleaner. What do you do about it on your tree? Some years are just worse than others. So these insects go through population explosions. They go through cycles. Some years are worse. This year apparently has been really good for whatever sucking insect you have in that tree. I would recommend, because it's a major tree in your property, is hiring a certified arborist to come in and inspect it and to give you advice on treatment for those insects, and then also to obviously tell you what is going on exactly, what insect is feeding on your tree. So we have great certified arborists here in Minnesota. We're very fortunate in that respect. You can find information on how to hire a tree care professional on the Extension site. It's at extension.umn.edu. And visit our trees and shrubs section. And that has a really good web page. It also gives you some good guidelines and questions to ask the certified arborist when they're there. So good luck with that. It's a kind of daunting job, but the certified arborist will help you out, a great certified arborist when they're there. So good luck with that. It's a kind of daunting job, but the certified arborist will help you out a great deal.
Very good. We need to take a quick break for weather. When we come back, we have about another half hour of the show to go here on CCO. 651-461-9226. Smart Garden Show returns after the weather here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks to Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions today. And again, Julie and John, packed show. And I wanted to thank our producer, Dennis Matuzak. You guys got the word that Dennis is, what the cops say, pulling the pin. He is retiring. This is his last show, his last Saturday today, guys.
Man, Dennis, thanks so much for being our engineer for all these years. It's just, I just remember talking with you when we were in the studio together before the pandemic and all about your cabin up north, and I think it was knotweed that you were having a lot of trouble with. So just really, really appreciate all you've done for us and keeping us moving right along and all organized. So good luck to you, and I hope I bump into you again.
Yeah, absolutely. He's, like you said, kept it running here. So, all right, Dennis, you're not done yet, so don't go away. We still have a show to do. So, great guy. All right, here's our phone number. It's also our text number, 651-461-9226. Julie, you want to talk about a little bit of what's on the website? We always like to plug the website. So much good information there. What else can we find on there these days?
Well, one of the pages that I want to call out, because this is the time of year people are harvesting and storing vegetables, and they're wondering, you know, where should I store them? How long do they last? What shouldn't I do? When do I pick my squash? That kind of thing. We have an excellent web page on the extension site called Harvesting and Storing Home Garden Vegetables. And it has a long, long list. It talks about storage temperatures. This is really specific to home storage, not professional or commercial storage, but it's got a whole long list of different vegetables, and you can look those up, and it tells you when to harvest that vegetable, how to store it, and what the expected shelf life is approximately. So I just wanted to call that out as a really good resource for those of you harvesting vegetables from your gardens right now.
I don't know if Dennis saw the text or email, but Mary Meyer sends her congratulations to you too, Dennis. So thanks, Mary, for that. John, a listener, says this via text. I just had my lawn aerated last week, then we'll seed and fertilize. This dry week coming up, should I water now?
Yeah, I would consider watering if the lawn is stressed out. Otherwise, you know, just these cooler evening temperatures, you know, we're getting, it is dry. It is getting a little bit warmer than normal during the day, but unless you're seeing it stressed out, I wouldn't necessarily worry too much about watering, but I would water if you are going to fertilize or if you are going to put down seed, though that's absolutely critical for both of those. Until then, I would just basically check in on the lawn and just make sure it's not stressed out.
General question via text from a listener. When's the best time to aerate and overseed my lawn? This is a good time of year, isn't it, right now?
Yeah, this is the best time of the year. So in true form of plugging the website again, we do have a webpage on the lawn care calendar. And if you look at it, the preferred time for doing the vast majority of the beneficial, you know, the practices for our lawns is the fall. And that's aerating, doing any kind of weed control for perennial weeds, fertilizing, overseeding. This is the very best time of the year for doing that. So this is definitely a great time to aerate and fertilize and overseed if you're interested in getting a healthier lawn next year.
Very good. Let's get back to the phones. Joanne is calling in from, Bloomington this morning. Joanne, thank you. What is your question, please?
Yeah, thanks. This is a great show. We always enjoy listening to it.
Thank you.
A week ago, we planted Carl Forrester plants and 5 coneflowers. Okay. And this past week, an animal has been coming through and eating all the greens off the flowers that we just planted. It might be deer. I saw some prints that looked like it might be deer. What do you suggest if I want some fall colorful colors back there? What could I use that wouldn't, you know, be a problem as far as animals go.
Well, are the grasses being eaten as well?
Yeah, no, the grasses are not being eaten. They're perfect. Yeah.
So I think that you're right. I think they're deer, particularly because you've seen some hoof prints or some kind of tracks that might look like deer. Right now, there's not much to do. You could fence them, but I'm not sure that that's people don't want to fence things necessarily. But you might want to fence them for winter. That could be too, even though they'll be dying back. But I would try putting a little bit of blood meal around them. You can purchase it online or at your local garden center. It's a powder. Just apply it, just kind of sprinkle it around those plants. It tends to, it's actually dried blood from a slaughterhouse, and it tends to repel animals short term. So you might want to try that to help these plants get settled in for the winter. And then be sure to apply it after rain, because it will kind of lose its potency at that point. Repellents are basically, they either smell bad or they taste bad. They're not poisonous. They won't hurt the animals, but they tend to kind of be offsetting to them.
Okay. Texter says this, John, I use a weed-free zone to spray for Creeping Charlie. How long before I can mow the lawn?
That is a good question. I think you generally want to wait a couple of days after using some kind of liquid or foliar herbicide application, just to make sure that you're not mowing off any of the parts of the plant that came in contact with the herbicide. So I would wait just a couple of days, but you don't have to wait more than a few days for most of that to have worked through the plant, especially when we have warmer days like we've been having. That tends to move through the plant even faster. Most of the time you could probably get away just mowing 2 or 3 days later, and I think that would be you would get the same level of control if you waited 7, for example.
Okay. Listener says this, only got a few tomatoes this year. What's the cause?
Oh, could be a number of things. So we had some hot weather. That can knock your production back. It affects the flowering and also the pollen viability in plants and vegetables, particularly in the nightshade family. Sometimes it is a lack of fertilizer. Sometimes the soil that you're using is not very rich, and you may need to fertilize the plants as well. It could also be excessive water. Sometimes it's too much water that we've had, and the plants can tend to drop their leaves and drop their flowers. They can't really hang on to them. They're under too much water at that point. So I'm going to go with the first one and say that it might just be that the heat was too much. And I know that sounds weird, because we think of tomatoes as heat-loving plants. But when night temperatures and when day temperatures get over 90, 95 degrees, and then night temperatures are high as well, it tends to make the plants less productive.
Okay. Let us grab a phone call. Pete is checking in this morning from Egan, I believe. Hi, Pete. Thanks for waiting. What is your question, please?
Yeah, we've talked a lot about aerating and overseeding, but my question is, I have a large yard and it has a lot of quack grass in it, and I can see the quack grass taking over. But if I were to aerate and reseed, would that lawn seed take over some of the space that the crabgrass is taking? I know normally you'd have to kill the whole yard off in order to get rid of it, but I've got a big yard. I really don't want to do that. Any suggestions for me on how to kind of take control?
Sure. So two thoughts here. The first is, I would just verify which weed species you're referring to. There's crabgrass that starts with a C, and then there's quackgrass that starts with a Q. The crabgrass is a summer annual that germinates in the spring, grows, develops throughout the summer. It appears to spread, but the plants are really just getting bigger. It kind of has the lime green colors, very fleshy, wide leaves. That's a summer annual that's going to die in just a couple of weeks. Two or three weeks, it's already starting to set seed and die. So I would not worry at all about that for trying to control that, if indeed that's crabgrass. Now, if you have quackgrass, that's a little bit more of a thinner, forming spindly lawn weed that resembles turf but grows about twice the rate. Quackgrass is a perennial. It's very difficult to control, and there's really no options for trying to selectively remove it from your lawn. So the best bet is using a non-selective herbicide like glyphosate if it's quackgrass. And that would involve having to reseed the area. You could also do solarization, but I think that's much less effective for trying to kill the underground rhizomes. So just verify that it is indeed quackgrass and not crabgrass, because if it's crabgrass, I would focus more on those proper management practices we had already mentioned. Ensuring a dense and healthy turf, maybe raising the mowing height, and creating fewer spaces for the crabgrass to enter next year.
Very good. Now we need to take a quick break. Julie, I wanted to ask you, and I forgot to ask you earlier, are the Abiders playing at all this weekend?
Yeah.
Very good. Now we need to take a quick break. Julie, I wanted to ask you, and I forgot to ask you earlier, are the Abiders playing at all this weekend?
Yeah, we sure are. We're playing at our friend Tim Carter's big birthday bash up in Independence. And then we're also playing out at Loose Line Orchard, which is in Watertown. And we are looking forward to this. Terry Train is the owner of that. And you know Terry, Denny.
She's my pal,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so she's going to be our pal, too, after we play with her. So it'll be a lot of fun. So we're looking forward to that. We'll be there tomorrow, Sunday, from 2 to 5. And we hope to meet some of our listeners out there. Come on out and pick some apples and enjoy all the fun things that Terry and her family have going on out at their orchard. So that's Loose Line Orchard, 2 to 5.
Oh, that's a great look. Tomorrow. I love Loose Line Orchard. I got to get back there one of these days. We'll say hi to Terry for us, will you?
I sure will.
Please? All right. In the meantime, let's take a quick break and be right back on the other side. Find out what's going on at the Arboretum and answer more questions here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. And welcome back on this Saturday morning, a beautiful one of that, to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M, answering those lawn and garden questions. And before we even talk about the Arboretum, which I was visiting the other day, we always, Julie and John, you always know we get questions about the grass seed, like, where do I find it? Is there a difference? All of that. And give us some info about that, because we always get questions about buying grass seed.
Sure. So a relatively new page that we created on the website is Buying Grass Seed for Minnesota Lawns. And it really goes into all of the background information for things that you should look for when purchasing seed. We also have places where we know that sell quality seed within Minnesota, a literal list of vendors. And the same is true if you're looking for bee lawn seed, where you can purchase bee lawn seed mixtures. Really great webpage to check out if indeed you're in the market for looking to purchase some grass seed.
All right, very good. Is it still okay to fertilize my rhododendrons? Listener wants to know.
Boy, that's a great question. I think it's okay to fertilize them at this point. I would actually definitely fertilize them in the spring when they're actively growing. One of the issues we have is when we start to fertilize and do maintenance on plants, like I mentioned pruning before, at this time of year, we tend to push the plant into production. In other words, it could start to grow and put out new growth, and that new growth may not harden off before our temperatures drop, and therefore it might be subject to winter kill. So I think it would be probably, because that's a pretty actively growing plant in the spring, I might wait and fertilize it into in early spring.
Okay. I was mentioning off air to Julie and John that I, Thursday, took a drive, that 3-mile drive at the Arboretum on a beautiful day, busy day there. And what a fun, plus I was able to pick up a few things at the Apple House. So it was a great afternoon. What is going on there? It seems like a lot these days.
Well, you mentioned the Apple House, which is in high season now with lots of great apples. I picked up some sweet tango apples the other day. But today, one of the big events is called Field Fest. This is out at our farm area of the Arboretum. It's family friendly. There are there's hands-on harvesting that you can do. There's also a beer garden and food trucks. There's some live entertainment. Lots of things for kids to do and adults. And so it's no charge with your access into the Arboretum, whether you're a member or if you pay to get in. So that's a big event today, and so I encourage people to go out there and check it out. That's some of the big things that are happening. There's lots of other things that you can see at arb.umn.edu.
Great time of year to get out there. Anytime,
excellent.
Really, but this is my favorite. John, a texter I'm reading is weed and feed effective if you can't water after the lawn has been sprayed?
Yeah, the perennial weed and feed question. So weed and feed products work best when they're able to be watered in. And that's because the products within the herbicide itself is taken up by the roots. There is some foliar uptake of the product, but because of that fertilizer component, we always want some of that nitrogen to be watered into the soil so that way it can be taken up as quickly as possible by the plants. Now, generally, we do not recommend using weed and feed products. If you've already purchased it, I would just be judicious with where you use it. Avoid using it within drip lines or under the shade of softer herbaceous plants, non-woody plants, things like that. Those are going to be more susceptible to it. But from a strategy standpoint, we try to avoid recommending folks to use weed and feed products because we recommend a better strategy is to spot treat for weeds if you're going to control them. Spot treating with some kind of liquid spray is much more effective than broadcasting a herbicide across your lawn, regardless of which weeds are present and wherever. Use the product, but I would make sure you water it in.
Very good. Here's a timely question from a listener. I have a lawn question. We currently cut our grass at 3.5 inches. When should we start dropping it, and how far down should we go without scalping the lawn?
Yeah, as far as the 3.5 inches is a great mowing height. That's the taller, the better. It's going to help prevent weeds. It's going to make your lawn more drought tolerant. That's a great starting point for your lawn height. Now, as far as lowering it, that can help with collecting or mulching tree leaves as they're falling this fall. But it's not absolutely critical that you lower your lawn height going into the winter. It can help prevent some snow mold and things like that if we get a lot of snow over the winter. But it's not absolutely necessary. But it can help a little bit, like I said, with mulching the tree leaves, or if you need to collect them and pick them up. But, one thing that I would do is just if you are going to go ahead and do that and lower your height, you can start doing that really in the middle to the end of September, and you'll have plenty of time of just taking it down about 1/2 inch to 1 inch each time. And I wouldn't go any lower than about 2 inches or so. So not a big drop from 3.5 down to 2 inches.
I think one more lawn question. Is dethatching a good idea?
Dethatching is oftentimes misunderstood. If you have an irrigation system with a Kentucky bluegrass lawn and you fertilize a couple of times a year, you might have excessive thatch that would require dethatching. But thatch is actually a good thing in most lawns. We really don't recommend trying to control or manage thatch until it's at least three quarters of an inch or so or more. And in most cases, that's not really all that beneficial. Now, dethatching in the spring can help stimulate some growth by getting some sunlight to the plants, to the crown of the plants. But really, dethatching is kind of overstated for its benefit for most people's lawns.
Holy mackerel, we're out of time. I just looked at the clock. We have 2 seconds to go. Check the abiders out later on this afternoon. Check them out. And Julie and John, thank you so much for all the work you guys do. And let's talk soon.
Sounds good, Denny. Thank you. Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks, John.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, indeed, especially lawns that don't get any moisture. And it looks like this week is going to be another dry week. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question for Julie Weisenhorn or John Trappi from the U of M, this is your day today here on our Smart Garden Show. Julie and John, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Denny.
Good morning.
Hi, I was thinking, hearing a commercial post State Fair, and I thought, man, that's come and gone already.
Isn't that something?
Man,
yeah.
Zoom. That's crazy.
Time flies.
But, yeah, it's always fun to have you guys out there with us. In the meantime, if you have that lawn and garden question that we mentioned, especially since John is joining Julie today, any kind of a turf question, if you've got issues with your lawn, call us or text us, 651-461-9226. My lawn, John, is looking kind of crunchy right now. And I'm thinking, I think I have a aeration scheduled, but is it better to get a lawn aerated? I just thought about this yesterday. When it's a little damp or dry like this?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. It'll be a little bit more effective for penetrating the soil if there's some moisture in it. So if it's really dry, the aerator will still work, but it's just it won't get quite as deep, and so it'll be a little bit less effective. So if you can do it a few days after a rain, or if you have an irrigation system, water a few days prior, just to help the aerator get into the soil.
And Julie, is there something I took out the remnants of my tomato plants, who kind of did okay, but just kind of cleaned up the area right now. Is there anything else that we should be doing in our gardens this time of year? It's a beautiful weekend for that.
Yeah, it's a great weekend for that. So definitely you can be harvesting if you have vegetables. If you're growing flowers, you could be certainly cutting bouquets of those. There's not anything really specific that comes to mind. It's too early to do any kind of fruit pruning. That happens in the winter. You might be looking at going and picking up some mums that are available now, both hardy mums, which will grow year after year in your garden, but also there are also florist mums if you're just doing, say, containers and you want something that is maybe not hardy, but looks nice for a short period of time in your containers. I'm thinking about my houseplants that are outside and starting to think about where they're going to go in my house when it gets a little cooler. We've had some cool nights. And now coming up, we've got some nice warm weather. So they're perfectly fine to be outside. But you might start thinking about indoors, like I should probably dust this table and where should I put this and just kind of strategizing where they're going to go when the weather changes.
We'll get some advice from John, too, about what we can do this time of year for our lawns. But I'm looking at some phone calls that are coming in. In fact, let's grab a couple. Patricia calling in from Little Canada, I believe, this morning. Hi, Patricia. What's your question for John and Julie? Hello, Patricia. I think we're looking for Patricia's phone call.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. What's your question, please? I'm wondering if Patricia's listening to the radio and not the phone. Could it be?
About Creepy Charlie. I've asked my local master gardener, and they found that very mysterious. I brought some samples to them. They have berries, ivory-colored berries on them.
Okay, well, Creepy Charlie doesn't have fruit. So it's not Creeping Charlie that you have.
Yeah.
What? Wonder what it is. I can kind of picture there are probably some weeds that I've seen in my yard with little purple berries or something.
Well, she said ivory berries, right, Patricia? Ivory, like white colored?
I don't think Patricia's on the phone now.
Okay. So one plant that is pretty prolific, but it's not at all like Creeping Charlie, is our nightshade, which has a kind of starts out with kind of green berries and they turn black. But it's a fairly tall plant, doesn't resemble Creeping Charlie at all. So, Patricia, if you are able, I would take a photo of that plant, take some really good clear photos, and visit our extension site, extension.umn.edu. And visit Yard and Garden. We have Ask a Master Gardener. We have a tool there where you can click on Ask a Master Gardener and then upload those images and type in your question. And we have lots of Master Gardeners. Maybe that Master Gardener just wasn't able to diagnose or determine what that plant was, but there are lots of Master Gardeners who can help you. Okay. So it's Ask a Master Gardener on Yard and Garden on Extension.
Let's pick up on another phone call this morning. Sharon, I believe, is calling in from Eden Prairie. Hi, Sharon. What is your question?
Good morning. Well, I've got a blue spruce on a stick, and it's an ornamental.
okay. On a standard. It's called a standard.
Yeah. And it needs trimming. I've snipped at it once in a while, but it looks like a donut on a stick, really. It, you know, and I was wondering, when is the best time to shape it? I mean, I can cut it, but I bet I would butcher it.
Okay. Well, that's a great question. Oh, good. I'm glad it's healthy. That's terrific. So, so this is a blue spruce that's been grafted onto what's called a standard, and it creates kind of a tree form, a lollipop form, or sometimes they have branches that kind of reach upward. Sometimes they're weeping also. So lots of really interesting plants. They're accent plants that kind of reach upward. Sometimes they're weeping also. So lots of really interesting plants. They're accent plants in the landscape. So in other words, they're very distinctive year-round in their form, and particularly if they're evergreen like this blue spruce. You can shape those plants. I'd recommend holding off right now, just because when you prune a plant, it tends to produce more growth at the point at which you cut. It's a response that the plant has to the cutting of their branches. So I would hold off, and I would look at maybe doing that next spring or even in the winter. You could try doing that. It might be kind of interesting. That the plant being dormant is not going to respond in the same way. It's going to wait until spring, and then it will start to produce new growth at those points. And next year in the spring, in the growing season, consider just pruning off the newest growth. Don't go deeper than that. So that's that more tender growth at the ends of the branches, and kind of stay within that boundary. Otherwise, you're going to get a plant that starts to lose that nice shape that you like.
For a moment there, I thought we were still talking about the state fair food, like blue spruce on a stick. you know, vegetarian
offer. That's where my mind went.
I did great kind of wonder if she got it maybe at the DNR booth.
Very good. I'm getting a signal. We need to take a quick break. I want to alert our phone callers. Stay there. We've got text messages to impart as well. This is in the midst of our Smart Garden Show. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you might have at 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO, it's now 50 degrees in the Twin Cities. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday on CCO in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks to folks like Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M. They're with us this morning answering those lawn and garden questions. And we have many, both by phone and by text. Before we get back to the phones, I wanted to grab this text that came in earlier about two asparagus beds. Texter says, I want to mulch them over the winter. Is it better to use straw or shredded leaves?
Well, I think that I think you could use either. Straw is pretty common. It's probably cleaner for the plants than, and it's maybe a little bit, it's probably more traditional, I would say. But I think you could use leaves. And I think either one would be fine.
All right. Very good. Back to the phones we go. Catherine checking in from Blaine this morning, I do believe. Catherine, you're on CCO. What is your question?
Good morning, guys. I'm so happy you took my call. I have I have a problem my hostas. They have holes in them. What is that from? Do you have any insight on that?
Well, holes in the leaves can be from a number of things. One of the easiest ones, and you can think back to where the weather's been where you live, and that would be hail. That's the first thing. If you haven't had any hail, holes in hostas can be from leaf-chewing beetles that are just out, you know, unless you actually catch the beetle in the act, it's hard to determine which beetle is chewing on them. They can also be from damage from mechanical damage. So if they are near where you mow or weed whip, you can also damage them that way. So that would be a human factor. So if you haven't had hail, I would say it's probably more likely insect damage. If they ever are very shredded, it could be deer damage, where deer are feeding on them too. The deer tend to pull on the hostas and kind of shred the leaves. So it's a number of different things it could be.
Okay. Looking at a bunch of lawn questions, John. Let's see if we can't field a couple of these and get back to the phones. What type of grass seed to put down next to a curb or driveway?
The fine fescues are the most salt tolerant. So, you know, typically there's a lot of salt damage if we've had a lot of snow and ice over the winter. So if there's thin turf there, oftentimes it starts with salt damage from winter stress. So I would look at the fine fescues. They generally work well in most lawn situations, and they work really well, or the best, I should say, among the turf grass species next to driveways and sidewalks.
All right, very good. My neighbors grow thistles, Texter says. All pleased to have them removed have been rejected. Is there any way to limit their migration into my clover lawn?
Oh, boy, it's just going to be weeding. Weeding and treating, so those are basically, that's basically it. I don't know, John, anything?
Yeah, thistles are really tough to predict when and where they're going to emerge just because the seed is so viable for so long. So if you're really dead set on doing this, maybe consider planting something that's going to block the seeds from carrying by the wind, but that's probably not very effective in itself. A dense and healthy turf is the best defense against weeds. So, just having a healthier lawn like you're trying is going to be your best option for preventing them.
Very good. Back to the phones we go. Monica calling in this morning from Bloomington. Monica, good morning. What is your question?
Good morning. We've had a crop circle of clover that we usually do every year in our yard, and this year it's about maybe 8 to 10 feet. In early spring, John, I don't know if this is pertaining to you because of turf, But in early spring, we saw rabbits around the area in the crop circle of clover. One rabbit was like really down far into the clover, but the next day or two went over there, and my hand, there were two skid marks, and I followed the, it looked like it went below the soil into the ground, and I didn't pursue it any longer. So during the summer, we have found baby bunnies, you know, around the yard, not necessarily in that clover patch, but I've seen mother rabbit around there. The grass, of course, around that area is really, really long now after all this time. We usually start mowing it. My husband is antsy to mow it. Number one, I haven't seen the rabbits around. I don't know if they still have a nest. So I guess my husband and I are wondering when we can start safely mowing it or how we mow it. And that's my question. So, John, I don't know if you've had customers had rabbits under their turf and what to do. Or Julie, a sure. Bunnyologist, anybody would help.
A bunnyologist.
That's a new one. I would maybe use a rake and turn it upside down and try to go through and just kind of lightly move the vegetation around. And you know, they're at this point in the year, unless it's a second generation of baby bunnies, they should be mobile enough to avoid the mower. But if you just go through and just kind of lightly, look and move the vegetation away, you should probably be able to find them and encourage them to move out of the area so that way you can mow. And I definitely would consider mowing. It's going to be better for the clover. It's going to be better for the lawn. I think in the long run, I would definitely try to get on that if you can.
Okay. Let's grab one more phone call before we look at that forecast. I think Mike is calling in this morning from Roseville. Hi, Mike. Thanks for waiting. What is your question?
Good morning. I've lived in the same house here for 32 years, and this year something really different is happening. I fear for going out on my rear out of the house on the back end and go out on the deck. For fear that my feet are going to stick to the deck. I got a giant pine tree here that I've never seen this before, but everywhere I look, there's sap and it's sticky. Oh. And the deck, and the furniture, and everything. Is there any reason for this year to be particularly bad for these big, long, big pine trees dropping their sap all over?
So I don't believe it's sap. It's probably honeydew. And honeydew is produced by aphids and other sucking insects like scale. It looks just like sap, and you're describing exactly what it is. When it hits when these insects get into a big tree like a shade tree or an evergreen, it's really difficult to manage them. And you do end up with this honeydew all over the place. I've had people report that even their dog has it on them. Cleaning it off, you can scrub it with a hot soapy water. If you have a alcohol safe surface like a grill or something, you can use isopropyl alcohol to try to get it off. But if you don't remove it, it's going to start to turn black. This is called sooty mold. It will attract fungal spores, and so it might start to stain some of your, if you have like furniture and whatnot. A deck cleaner will probably help too, a commercial deck cleaner. What do you do about it on your tree? Some years are just worse than others. So these insects go through population explosions. They go through cycles. Some years are worse. This year apparently has been really good for whatever sucking insect you have in that tree. I would recommend, because it's a major tree in your property, is hiring a certified arborist to come in and inspect it and to give you advice on treatment for those insects, and then also to obviously tell you what is going on exactly, what insect is feeding on your tree. So we have great certified arborists here in Minnesota. We're very fortunate in that respect. You can find information on how to hire a tree care professional on the Extension site. It's at extension.umn.edu. And visit our trees and shrubs section. And that has a really good web page. It also gives you some good guidelines and questions to ask the certified arborist when they're there. So good luck with that. It's a kind of daunting job, but the certified arborist will help you out. A great certified arborist when they're there. So good luck with that. It's a kind of daunting job, but the certified arborist will help you out a great deal.
Very good. We need to take a quick break for weather. When we come back, we have about another half hour of the show to go here on CCO. 651-461-9226. Smart Garden Show returns after the weather here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks to Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions today. And again, Julie and John, packed show. And I wanted to thank our producer, Dennis Matuzak. You guys got the word that Dennis is, what the cops say, pulling the pin. He is retiring. This is his last show, his last Saturday today,
wow.
Guys.
Man, Dennis, thanks so much for being our engineer for all these years. It's just, I just remember talking with you when we were in the studio together before the pandemic and all about your cabin up north and I think it was knotweed that you were having a lot of trouble with. So I just really, really appreciate all you've done for us and keeping us moving right along and all organized. So good luck to you, and I hope I bump into you again.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're
Dennis
the best.
He's, like you said, kept it running here. So, all right, Dennis, you're not done yet, so don't go away. We still have a show to do. So, great guy. All right, here's our phone number. It's also our text number, 651-461-9226. Julie, you want to talk about a little bit what's on the website? We always like to plug the website. So much good information there. What else can we find on there these days?
Well, one of the pages that I want to call out, because this is the time of year people are harvesting and storing vegetables, and they're wondering, you know, where should I store them? How long do they last? What shouldn't I do? When do I pick my squash? That kind of thing. We have an excellent web page on the extension site called Harvesting and Storing Home Garden Vegetables. And it has a long, long list. It talks about storage temperatures. This is really specific to home storage, not professional or commercial storage. But it's got a whole long list of different vegetables, and you can look those up, and it tells you when to harvest that vegetable, how to store it, and what the expected shelf life is approximately. So I just wanted to call that out as a really good resource for those of you harvesting vegetables from your gardens right now.
Okay. I don't know if Dennis saw the text or email, but Mary Meyer sends her congratulations to you too,
Mary.
Dennis. So thanks, Mary, for that. John, a listener, says this via text. I just had my lawn aerated last week, then we'll seed and fertilize. This dry week coming up, should I water now?
Yeah, I would consider watering if the lawn is stressed out. Otherwise, you know, just these cooler evening temperatures, you know, we're getting, it is dry. It is getting a little bit warmer than normal during the day. But unless you're seeing it stressed out, I wouldn't necessarily worry too much about watering. But I would water if you are going to fertilize or if you are going to put down seed. Though that's absolutely critical for both of those. Until then, I would just basically check in on the lawn and just make sure it's not stressed out.
General question via text from a listener. When's the best time to aerate and overseed my lawn? This
well,
is a good time of year, isn't it, right now?
Yeah, this is the best time of the year. So in true form of plugging the website again, we do have a webpage on the lawn care calendar. And if you look at it, the preferred time for doing the vast majority of the beneficial, you know, the practices for our lawns is the fall. And that's aerating, doing any kind of weed control for perennial weeds, fertilizing, overseeding. This is the very best time of the year for doing that. So this is definitely a great time to aerate and fertilize and overseed if you're interested in getting a healthier lawn next year.
Very good. Let's get back to the phones. Joanne is calling in from, Bloomington this morning. Joanne, thank you. What is your question, please?
Yeah, thanks. This is a great show. We always enjoy listening to it.
Thank you.
A week ago, we planted Carl Forrester plants and five coneflowers. Okay. And this past week, an animal has been coming through and eating all the greens off the flowers that we just planted. It might be deer. I saw some prints that looked like it might be deer. What do you suggest if I want some fall colorful colors back there? What could I use that wouldn't, be a problem as far as animals go?
Well, are the grasses being eaten as well?
Yeah, no, the grasses are not being eaten. They're perfect. Yeah.
So I think that you're right. I think they're deer, particularly because you've seen some hoof prints or some kind of tracks that might look like deer. Right now, there's not much to do. You could fence them, but I'm not sure that that's, people don't want to fence things necessarily, but you might want to fence them for winter. That could be too, even though they'll be dying back. But I would try putting a little bit of blood meal around them. You can purchase it online or at your local garden center. It's a powder. Just apply it, just kind of sprinkle it around those plants. It tends to, it's actually dried blood from a slaughterhouse, and it tends to repel animals short term. So you might want to try that to help these plants get settled in for the winter. And then be sure to apply it after rain, because it will kind of lose its potency at that point. Repellents are basically, they either smell bad or they taste bad. They're not poisonous. They won't hurt the animals, but they tend to kind of be offsetting to them.
Okay. Texter says this, John, I use a weed-free zone to spray for Creeping Charlie. How long before I can mow the lawn?
That is a good question. I think you generally want to wait a couple of days after using some kind of liquid or foliar herbicide application, just to make sure that you're not mowing off any of the parts of the plant that came in contact with the herbicide. So I would wait just a couple of days, but you don't have to wait more than a few days for most of that to have worked through the plant, especially when we have warmer days like we've been having. That tends to move through the plant even faster. Most of the time you could probably get away just mowing 2 or 3 days later, and I think that would be you would get the same level of control if you waited 7, for example.
Okay. Listener says this, only got a few tomatoes this year. What's the cause?
Oh, it could be a number of things. So we had some hot weather. That can knock your production back. It affects the flowering and also the pollen viability in plants and vegetables, particularly in the nightshade family. Sometimes it is a lack of fertilizer. Sometimes the soil that you're using is not very rich, and you may need to fertilize the plants as well. It could also be excessive water. Sometimes it's too much water that we've had, and the plants can tend to drop their leaves and drop their flowers. They can't really hang on to them. They're under too much water at that point. So I'm going to go with the first one and say that it might just be that the heat was too much. And I know that sounds weird, because we think of tomatoes as heat-loving plants. But when night temperatures and when day temperatures get over 90, 95 degrees, and then night temperatures are high as well, it tends to make the plants less productive.
Okay. Let us grab a phone call. Pete is checking in this morning from Egan, I believe. Hi, Pete. Thanks for waiting. What is your question, please?
Yeah, we've talked a lot about aerating and overseeding, but my question is, I have a large yard and it has a lot of quack grass in it, and I can see the quack grass taking over. But if I were to aerate and reseed, would that lawn seed take over some of the space that the crabgrass is taking? I know normally you'd have to kill the whole yard off in order to get rid of it, but I've got a big yard. I really don't want to do that. Any suggestions for me on how to kind of take control?
Sure. So two thoughts here. The first is I would just verify which weed species you're referring to. There's crabgrass that starts with a C, and then there's quackgrass that starts with a Q. The crabgrass is a summer annual that germinates in the spring, grows, develops throughout the summer. It appears to spread, but the plants are really just getting bigger. It kind of has the lime green colors, very fleshy, wide leaves. That's a summer annual that's going to die in just a couple of weeks. Two or three weeks, it's already starting to set seed and die. So I would not worry at all about that for trying to control that, if indeed that's crabgrass. Now, if you have quackgrass, that's a little bit more of a thinner, forming spindly lawn weed that resembles turf but grows about twice the rate. Quackgrass is a perennial. It's very difficult to control, and there's really no options for trying to selectively remove it from your lawn. So the best bet is using a non-selective herbicide like glyphosate if it's quackgrass, and that would involve having to reseed the area. You could also do solarization, but I think that's much less effective for trying to kill the underground rhizomes. So just verify that it is indeed quackgrass and not crabgrass, because if it's crabgrass, I would focus more on those proper management practices we had already mentioned. Ensuring a dense and healthy turf, maybe raising the mowing height and creating fewer spaces for the crabgrass to enter next year.
Very good. No, we need to take a quick break. Julie, I wanted to ask you, and I forgot to ask you earlier, are the Abiders playing at all this weekend?
Yeah.
Very good. No, we need to take a quick break. Julie, I wanted to ask you, and I forgot to ask you earlier, are the Abiders playing at all this weekend?
Yeah, we sure are. We're playing at our friend Tim Carter's big birthday bash up in Independence. And then we're also playing out at Loose Line Orchard, which is in Watertown. And we are looking forward to this. Terry Train is the owner of that. And you know Terry, Denny.
She's my pal,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so she's going to be our pal, too, after we play with her. So it'll be a lot of fun. So we're looking forward to that. We'll be there tomorrow, Sunday, from 2 to 5. And we hope to see to meet some of our listeners out there. Come on out and pick some apples and enjoy all the fun things that Terry and her family have going on out at their orchard. So that's Loose Line Orchard, 2 to 5.
Oh, that's a great look. Tomorrow. I love Loose Line Orchard. I got to get back there one of these days. We'll say hi to Terry for us, will you?
I sure will.
Please? All right. In the meantime, let's take a quick break and be right back on the other side. Find out what's going on at the Arboretum and answer more questions here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. And welcome back on this Saturday morning, a beautiful one of that, to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M, answering those lawn and garden questions. And before we even talk about the Arboretum, which I was visiting the other day, we always, Julie and John, you always know we get questions about the grass seed, like, where do I find it? Is there a difference? All of that. And give us some info about that, because we always get questions about buying grass seed.
Sure. So a relatively new page that we created on the website is Buying Grass Seed for Minnesota Lawns. And it really goes into all of the background information for things that you should look for when purchasing seed. We also have places where we know that sell quality seed within Minnesota, a literal list of vendors. And the same is true if you're looking for bee lawn seed, where you can purchase bee lawn seed mixtures. Really great webpage to check out if indeed you're in the market for looking to purchase some grass seed.
All right, very good. Is it still okay to fertilize my rhododendrons? Listener wants to know.
Boy, that's a great question. I think it's okay to fertilize them at this point. I would actually definitely fertilize them in the spring when they're actively growing. One of the issues we have is when we start to fertilize and do maintenance on plants. Like I mentioned, pruning before, at this time of year, we tend to push the plant into production. In other words, it's going to start, it could start to grow and put out new growth, and that new growth may not harden off before our temperatures drop, and therefore it might be subject to winter kill. So I think it would be probably, because that's a pretty actively growing plant in the spring, I might wait and fertilize it in early spring.
Okay. I was mentioning off air to Julie and John that I Thursday took a drive, that 3-mile drive at the Arboretum on a beautiful day, busy day there, and what a fun, plus I was able to pick up a few things at the Apple House, so it was a great afternoon. What is going on there? It seems like a lot these days.
Well, you mentioned the Apple House, which is in high season now with lots of great apples. I picked up some sweet tango apples the other day. But today, one of the big events is called Field Fest. This is out at our farm area of the Arboretum. It's family friendly. There's hands-on harvesting that you can do. There's also a beer garden and food trucks. There's some live entertainment. Lots of things for kids to do and adults. And so it's no charge with your access into the Arboretum, whether you're a member or if you pay to get in. So that's a big event today, and so I encourage people to go out there and check it out. That's some of the big things that are happening. There's lots of other things that you can see at arb.umn.edu.
Great time of year to get out there, any time really, but this is my favorite. John, a texter I'm reading is weed and feed effective if you can't water after the lawn has been sprayed?
Yeah, perennial weed and feed question. So weed and feed products work best when they're able to be watered in. And that's because they're the products within the herbicide itself is taken up by the roots. There is some foliar uptake of the product, but because of that fertilizer component, we always want some of that nitrogen to be watered into the soils. That way it can be taken up as quickly as possible by the plants. Now, generally, we do not recommend using weed and feed products. If you've already purchased it, I would just be judicious with where you use it. Avoid using it within drip lines or under the shade of softer herbaceous plants, non-woody plants, things like that. Those are going to be more susceptible to it. But from a strategy standpoint, we try to avoid recommending folks to use weed and feed products because we recommend a better strategy is to spot treat for weeds if you're going to control them. Spot treating with some kind of liquid spray is much more effective than broadcasting a herbicide across your lawn, regardless of which weeds are present and wherever. So use the product, but I would make sure you water it in.
Very good. Here's a timely question from a listener. I have a lawn question. We currently cut our grass at 3.5 inches. When should we start dropping it, and how far down should we go without scalping the lawn?
Yeah, as far as the 3.5 inches is a great mowing height. That's the taller, the better. It's going to help prevent weeds. It's going to make your lawn more drought tolerant. That's a great starting point for your lawn height. Now, as far as lowering it, that can help with collecting or mulching tree leaves as they're falling this fall. But it's not absolutely critical that you lower your lawn height going into the winter. It can help prevent some snow mold and things like that if we get a lot of snow over the winter. But it's not absolutely necessary. But it can help a little bit, like I said, with mulching the tree leaves or if you need to collect them and pick them up. But one thing that I would do is just if you are going to go ahead and do that and lower your height, you can start doing that really in the middle to the end of September, and you'll have plenty of time of just taking it down about 0.5 inch to 1 inch each time. And I wouldn't go any lower than about 2 inches or so. So not a big drop from 3.5 down to 2 inches.
I think one more lawn question. Is dethatching a good idea?
Dethatching is oftentimes misunderstood. if you have an irrigation system with a Kentucky bluegrass lawn and you fertilize a couple of times a year, you might have excessive thatch that would require dethatching. But thatch is actually a good thing in most lawns. We really don't recommend trying to control or manage thatch until it's at least three quarters of an inch or so or more. And in most cases, that's not really all that beneficial. Now, dethatching in the spring can help stimulate some growth by getting some sunlight to the plants, to the crown of the plants. But really, dethatching is kind of overstated for its benefit for most people's lawns.
Holy mackerel. We're out of time. I just looked at the clock. We have 2 seconds to go. Check the abiders out later on this afternoon. Check them out. And Julie and John, thank you so much for all the work you guys do. And let's talk soon.
Sounds good, Denny. Thank you. Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks, John.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.